Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell. I'm sitting with Sarah McDooling. And we're across from Angela Meyer, who's coming to talk about her stunning new novel, Superior Spectre.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. This is a book that we could, this podcast is not going to be long enough. That's what I'm going to warn everyone right now, because there's so much going on in this book. And so I get to read a lot of novels coming through, and very few of them take on this moment in time with as much fearlessness, I suppose, is the feeling I got with it, because there are massive, big issues that people are just not dealing with at the moment. And you just go, stomp, 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 I'm going to go straight into this. What's the question here? Mm-hmm. How do you manage as an artist to keep that spirit alive in a world with all these commercial things and all this social media opinions and people jumping on you for saying anything out of line?
Mm-hmm.
How do you keep as brave as you are?
I think that there's no point not being like that. That's just, I guess, a philosophy for me in my life. I don't know how to be any other way. And in writing, and I try to be this way in my work as well, but you're living in a world which is dominated by commercial capitalist concerns constantly. But I like to try to always stay true to what I think is my central kind of political, philosophical core of being.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That might sound really lofty, but it's very easy to be drawn away from that, because, as you say, that's like the world that we live in.
Yeah, and it seems worse and worse for artists at the moment. That, you know, you step one step out of line, you say one idea that one group doesn't like, and you just get thumped. Like,
yeah.
And it just doesn't stop, just piling on. And I fear for art in this environment, because it does seem like we're getting a little bit, not you, but me, more cowardly as I sort of get older and watch this happen.
Yeah, well, I absolutely... It's a really hard question in a way, but I never want to offend or hurt anybody. Like, that's just kind of how I am. But I also believe really strongly in complexity and grey areas and going beyond binaries. Like, I think that's one thing my book does on lots of different levels. I mean, gender, for one, like, you have a man in a woman's head, and experiencing life through her, as the reader's experiencing life through him, as a very challenging kind of character. But there's a lot of other kind of binaries I'm playing with as well, like nature and culture and mind and body. And I hope that I'm always creating spaces between these. And I think one of the most wonderful things about the feedback to the novel so far is that people say they think about it afterwards. And that's exactly what I hope these kinds of spaces do. Because I think when you're talking about that kind of culture of immediate kind of knee-jerk calling out and stuff, it's when there's not always consideration and there's not always layers. I don't know if I'm articulating
no, you
well,
are,
but
because I know that you have an obsession with Mr. David Bowie, and I grew up, and he was my life raft in a world of suburban boring and beige, and I love the fact that there was so much complexity, so much, wherever you went, you're going to have problems. Like, there's going to be issues and it was exciting. He made things exciting. And I then drifted towards novels and literature that would do that for me as well. And I'm imagining, a young 18-year-old or 21-year-old picking up your book and feeling like the first time, you know, we heard Hunky Dory or something, you know.
That actually makes me want to cry so hard right now, because I have the exact same thing that Bowie did for me. Yeah. And I was about that age exactly. I was like 18, 17, 18 when I really got into him. And it was the same. He smashed something for me, but something I'd felt deep inside myself, particularly from the beginning of adolescence and where I grew up as well, small town, I felt had that outsider feeling. And he articulated that in some way. And it was partly the gender bending thing, but it was also the manner of his art and work and the even chameleonic aspect of it. There was so much contained in his body of work, and it was complex.
And if it fucked up, he just tried and done something else.
That's right.
There was a sense
of humour about it. And actually my novel has a sense of humour too. And I don't know, it's dark, but I hope, that also that is an aspect of it that allows a little thing to kind of crack open in the reader, because they can relax. They can kind of go, oh, you know, it's not all that serious. It's playful.
Let's talk about the novel. So if we haven't heard about it and we're sitting here, tell us about your novel.
Okay, so it's about a dying man who runs away from near future Australia, conservative Australia, to the Scottish Highlands to basically allow himself to die and get away from prolonging his life through operations and so on. And he's a very self-indulgent man, and he's run away with this experimental technology that allows him to enter the mind of someone in the past. And that happens to be a woman in 19th century Scotland, a young woman who's just sort of coming of age. And it's actually, I've sort of done the opposite thing with her sometimes, where you have a character wanting something. She actually has everything she wants, and then that gets disturbed both by him and by her father sort of wanting things for her. So these men kind of end up changing the path of her life. And really for her, it's wanting to get back to the quite simple things that she desires, and the space almost to discover what she wants, you know, psychologically and things like that, what her life's going to be, her growth. So that's it pretty much. And, the other part of it is she begins to become aware of the man, Jeff's presence. So it has a bit of a gothic aspect to it in that. Yeah.
This is such an extraordinary premise. And I've been so excited to read it. This doesn't normally happen at Booktopia. We received 2 advanced copies of this, and there's been a line
People
trying to get their copy. So I've just got my hands on it, and I'm very early in. But I first heard about the book described to me as Outlander meets Handmaid's Tale.
Mm-hmm.
And you had me at that. And then I heard more about it, and I was like, oh, my God, yes. And then I saw the cover, and I was like, I'm in love.
Oh.
And so, it's an unusual thing when you're not normally, like, having so many people desperate to read these copies.
And because Ben was the other one who read it at the same time I was reading it. There's been conversations, these kind of conversations, we're trying not to tell anything about.
Yeah.
And then I had to proof the reviews, and I'm like, oh my God, it sounds so good.
it's been one of those books, because there's so much to talk about, and you're talking about books that actually leave you thinking about it.
Yes.
Afterwards. And this book is one of those. And because you don't give us all the answers, you raise so many questions, and there's so many different things going on. But the answers are still to be answered. It's almost like you're passing on a challenge to the next writer and the next creative to sort of come along and try to answer some of these questions that you're raising in this book. I liken this book to, in my head, to things like Lolita and Damien and these sort of books that have this, this appeal, which is, it's got this darkness to it, but it goes to places we're not comfortable with.
Yes, and definitely. Just
steps right into it and challenges. Like when I hear someone trying to say that Lolita shouldn't be sold and it should be burnt and put aside, and these are people who are meant to be the kinds of people, guardians of culture.
Mm.
It's not just crazy Midwest librarians.
Yeah.
That scares the crap out of me. And this book came at a time when I was getting a little bit frightened.
Right.
And to have you step into this with Jeff and some of the things that Jeff thinks and some of the things that Jeff's done and the effect he has as Leonora, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. On Leonora, it's bold. And what sort of response have you had to Jeff? Because Jeff is a complex guy.
Well, I've been amazed so far, actually, that a lot of people have understood the kind of things I guess I'm doing with that character. But I also haven't scrolled down on Goodreads, and I can see that my overall rating is, you know, not 5 stars. And I'm sure there are some people who will just read the first scene with him, you know, masturbating and probably put the book down, and it's just not going to be for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there are a lot of people who want to be challenged by characters and who want to still read things that challenge them on a deep psychological level, and to think about whether, you know, most of the time it's not going to be the exact same things as Jeff has going on, but whether they have their own kind of aberrant desires or their own kind of things that they think about that are really, everybody has those things that are in the depths of their minds and that they might feel shame about or that they hardly ever think about or face properly. Like, I think people can relate to him as much as he's like, he's a complex character, but he's predatory and horrible. And I hated him at times. But it's very fun to write a character that you hate at times. And then other times there's a lot of me in him as well, you know? So, I think it's only just coming out now. I think there's definitely going to be some of those reactions where people hate it and think that it's the opposite than what it is and are going to think that it's going to harm people or something. But I've been heartened so far at some of the wonderful responses. I've had a few interviews and stuff that aren't out yet, but people are getting it and stimulated by the dark places I've gone to, I guess. Yeah, which is great.
It's a very physical book. Like,
yes,
it's just so physical. And I mean, even though it's about inhabiting the mind, there's that the sense in the book of a knowledge that the body and the mind are one, and there's you can't have one without the other. And it has an eroticism which is all of its own. Like, it really, because of this sense of physicality to it, and this young girl coming through and it, you know, it's kind of a get out of jail free card for Leonora, in the sense that she's now got Jeff involved. That, oh, it's not really me that's now experimenting with this stuff.
Or is it?
Yeah, is it Jeff?
Or is it? Yeah.
And so I, in my head, the way I thought about it, I think these two characters are, because they're different ages, they're very strong individual beings who would probably have gone on and done these sort of things of their own. Because we meet her when she's young, still in the care of her father. She goes to Edinburgh. And she gets to experience more of life, which then throws her into experience of people who are living completely different lives to she's experienced up until then, which would have an effect on you anyway.
Yes.
Without Jeff.
Yep.
So I think that's beautifully done, the way in which you've left us wondering as to is this her natural, you know, maturing?
Yes, so some of the desires she has and things like that, you mean?
Yeah,
and also the interests that she develops,
Because that strongness is evident in the first opening scenes when she, the Laird, is around, and she's showing I suppose because of the sheltered
curiosity.
Life, the curiosity there, but also a boldness with her sexuality, which she's comfortable
with herself. Yeah. I wanted her to be comfortable.
Yeah.
From the beginning in herself. Yeah.
Well, in a lot of 19th century literature, they do talk about, you know, people who work on the land get to see what's actually going on with sex and the like all the time. And so they're sort of more comfortable. In the First World War, they're wondering why all the soldiers were getting, you know, crawling up the wall. All these officers were going, what is going on with these boys? Because they had experienced sex from an early age.
Yeah.
And while the officers didn't even know what it was and how it worked. Because they were in a different world altogether. These farm guys knew about it. And so same with Leonora. You get this.
That's right. She's always been around animals, and I always envisioned her that way from when I first imagined her character, that aspect of the natural world and her. She was just completely kind of at one with that. And it's more the cerebral stuff that disturbs her ability to just be that. Yeah.
What, can we talk a little bit, so you spoke about when you first imagined Leonora.
Mm.
Where did the broader idea? Like, what was the first spark for you?
There were so many things that all came together at different times that it's really hard to talk about as a, like, one idea following another. But I remember having a vision of an image of, I don't know where it came from, but of a man like opening a box with a like robot that was going to be like a sex toy. I don't know why that came to my head. And then I must have read an article or something, who knows. And then that was kind of there. I was like, what kind of man would do that? And then Leonora came to me in parts. I can't remember how they came together, but I went to Edinburgh Book Festival. I was chairing some panels, and I forget what year it was. I'm really bad at details. But I saw a bunch of panels, and this is when I was working on my little book of flash fiction, Captive, so it must have been 2013 or so. And I saw quite a few different panels, and some of the ideas from them coalesced, and I was in Scotland, and I spent a lot of time in Scotland, so a lot of it came from just spending time there. And when you talk about the sensual aspect of the book, John, that's how I feel in Scotland. That country does something to me. I just walk along and I, like, touch everything. I touch the grass. I don't know why. It's just a place like that. And it could be the times I've been there as well, that it's been times when my thoughts have been allowed to flow as well, whereas when I'm here in Australia in my busy life, it's, you know, so I guess that's one of those binaries there, is like the space and time to be in an environment versus your kind of intellectual working life. So at that festival I saw a neuroscience panel, and I saw a talk on Caravaggio. And there's all these bits that have ended up being in the book. So that was Edinburgh Book Festival, I think 2013 is to blame for, like, some of this.
Thanks, Edinburgh Book Festival 2013. Yeah.
And how long did it take to write? Because it seems a very complex book.
About 3 years, and that's working on it, like, only maybe 2 days a week because working and stuff. But the world that Jeff comes from, the near future world, actually came from a previous manuscript that I wrote for my doctorate. So the guy, Henry, that he mentioned that he works with is actually a character in the previous manuscript. And one of the central ideas of the nanotechnology I used in short film when I was like 19. So actually there's all these bits that had been in place. So I feel like it took longer in some ways, but the actual sitting down and working on it, about 3 years. Yeah.
And a lot of writers and a lot of artists talk about building up the power to kind of do this kind of fiction, so they can have the idea earlier, but then they're not mature enough, or they're not brave enough, or they're not something's not quite right.
Yeah.
To take on some of the themes that in this one you've taken on. Did you feel that as you were putting this together over the years, that you were actually because it feels like there's kind of it gets bolder as the book goes through, but that's part of the storytelling side of things. But is there also a sense of it does get bolder as you go through? Do you feel you're getting stronger by writing
this sort of thing? Yeah, definitely. And I have written several manuscripts before that, and obviously I work with books and I read constantly, and I think when I got to this one and working, when I got to the idea, actually, I'd just started sending out the previous manuscript. I sent it about 3 places. And then I had this idea all came together, and I actually withdrew it because I was like, if I pull this off, this will be a better first novel. Like, I actually had that kind of thought. And that was really hard decision, because I've been trying to write a novel for years. Like, I'm only 33 now, but since I was 19, I've been seriously trying to write a novel. So that is a long time. But I just knew I had to give this one a go. It was just a very strong feeling, like an instinct that I kind of needed to follow it through.
And what sort of work did you have to do to get the Leonora parts of the 19th century Scotland? Edinburgh in that time, it's so vivid.
Heaps of research. Yeah. So I had been over there a couple times already, and I had a long trip with my partner at the time, and we actually did work stay. So we actually worked in a guest house. I set the fire, mm-hmm. you know, et cetera. Wow. There's so many details that I actually, you know, came from real life. I walked through, you know, so many of the places in the book. I chose where Leonora lived by walking the streets of Edinburgh and going, that's it. That's the place. That was where her aunt lives.
Yeah.
So it's an actual place I could take people to. And Jeff's, the places he stays, the unnamed tiny island reached by a footbridge is a place I stayed, and I'm not going to reveal where it is because a family lives on it and, you know, and then he goes to Islay, where I've also been, one of the most wonderful whiskey regions in the world.
It's a bit blurry, that area.
And then I went back when I had written almost the first draft. I went and stayed on the Isle of Jura in George Orwell's house, where he finished 1984, and I slept in his room, and I finished a lot of the book there. And that is one of the most amazing places in Scotland. And the other thing I did there was deliberately lived in 19th century conditions, so no electricity, and actually the water filter got clogged, so I had barely any running water.
So you had bed pads, please? God damn.
There was enough for that to flush the toilet. It's all good. But, you know, it was like a hand bath, you know, there wasn't much. And, you know, doing big walks and I was staying with a friend there, but on Islay I stayed two nights completely isolated, and a lot of the – in no electricity. So a lot of the details of Jeff being completely isolated, like how he feels hearing his own blood and all this sort of stuff, is actually things I experienced.
Because that is so vivid. Like it's really – you're right there. And I was saying earlier that how physical this book is, and obviously – a lot of this has come straight from you putting yourself out.
That's right.
It seems quite a bit.
I think I'm a method writer.
You've got the textbook setting in Paris or in New York.
It's Berlin, actually.
Berlin, okay, the next one.
Yeah, I've got to go back there.
I have to do for work.
Yeah, that's right.
Are you able to tell us anything about the next one? Or is it
not yet, because it might not work and might not end up being the next one. But I can tell you I'm trying to write a thriller.
Oh my God.
If you can carry on the way which you've been writing this one into the thriller region,
yeah, it'd be fantastic. It won't be an ordinary thriller, and it will have erotic elements. Yes.
Yeah. Excellent.
Awesome.
Because this book is such a triumph in that whole area. It's just not only is it, you know, does it take us in places we're not comfortable in going, which is what art really should be doing, but the way in which you make us feel. Like I said in my review that these two are jumping into each other's brains, you know, and we're doing the same. You know, we get to go into those experiences ourselves. This is, in a sense, what your book is, taking that next step where authors have been trying to do for years. You know, they're trying to get in people's brains. They're trying to influence them and to move them around different areas and make them see things they wouldn't normally see. Mm-hmm. And you're sort of describing it in your book in a more literal sense. Yeah.
Well, it has a metafictional aspect to it in that way. And I think it's funny. I find it amusing because that's like a Jeff part of me. I'm like getting into people's heads. I'm like, oh dear. But that's the authority of the word author. I mean, my whole life is books. I'm a publisher. I've been a book reviewer. I just read all the time, and I'm fascinated by what books can do. So I think there's an element of my fascination with that has come into how I've actually written a novel. Yeah.
Angela, thank you so much for coming and talking to us. We've really enjoyed it. And as I said at the beginning, we could wander down so many different paths here. And you know, this is a family channel. So we sort of stayed clear of a few of the things that we could have got into. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you can get hold of a Superior Spectre at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.